welcome to episode 11 of Cracking the Spine. I'm Zane.
I'm Sean.
And,
You're okay with calling it episode 11?
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's episode 10.2 and a half.
Episode 10.2.1?
Yeah.
Because we didn't get to cover everything last week exactly. That we talked about talking about.
Yeah. But it's episode 11 for the sake of, record keeping.
Unless, of course, I delete these files, too, in which case, I don't even know how to number them after that. We'll have to go to, like, letters or Roman numerals or something. Oh, boy.
The episode that will never die. It lives in infamy.
So, Zane.
Yes, Sean.
What are you reading?
I just finished, finally, Consumed by David Cronenberg.
Okay.
Because you were bugging me last week because I hadn't finished it yet.
Bugging you. I was just asking you. It's part of the thing. It's part of the format of the show.
But I finally finished it. And? I liked it. I think that you have to be into David Cronenberg. You have to be into, like, that thing.
Dark?
Dark, and it's, you know, he's very good at body horror, and this book is not just, like, it doesn't just include body horror. It's basically about body horror.
Okay.
So you have to be into that and, like, willing to read descriptions.
So, like, graphic and visceral.
Very graphic. I mean, I don't know. It's I guess if you're the wrong reader, it might seem gratuitous.
Okay.
But I liked it, you know, and I'm a fan of horror, and I'm a fan of David Cronenberg sometimes. Right. So, you know, I liked it. It's about, like, technology and sex and disease and, you know, our bodies. It's sort of about modern culture, paparazzi, and, you know, the way that we view things through technology and things like that.
Okay.
But I would recommend it if you can stomach it.
All right. Maybe I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
Do you know what's next? I mean,
I don't know what's next.
Okay.
I have a whole big list of
things.
You
have a pile, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I have a big pile, so I sort of have to pick one.
And what else were you reading just before we started the show?
Young Rider,
yeah.
Which is a fabulous riding magazine.
We actually record the show in a bookshop, which I've mentioned before, and we're right by the magazine section. And I closed the store the night we record, and I came back out and found Zane reading a magazine. And I was like, what are you reading? She was like, Young Rider magazine!
I've mentioned before that I am a lifelong horse enthusiast, and I also work professionally with horses, and I own my own horse, and I've been doing this for 23 years now, so I saw Young Rider, and I couldn't resist, and it's still, I mean, I just kind of skipped through it, but it's still great.
Okay.
So screw
great. I was just just underlining it because that's what you were reading.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
To be fair,
yeah.
Technically speaking, you're technically correct, which is the best kind of correct.
Exactly.
So, Sean, what are you reading this
week? I finished The Eternal World. The author's name escapes me right now. We talked about it last week. It was good. Nothing that's gonna, you know, set the world on fire. It would make a really good film if they did it right.
What is it about?
It's about, the Fountain of Youth and conquistadors.
Oh, that's right. That's that book.
And there's some, like, corporate intrigue. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I did, like I mentioned last week, I did, in fact, give it to your mother, who started it. And she was like, you are exactly right about what this is about. And I was like, yeah. So I finished that, and then actually, in the interim, I read an entire another book. It was called The Psychopath Test.
Okay.
By John Ronson, who wrote The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Okay, yeah.
Which they adapted into a film, which was a fantastic film. And he's a journalist, so it's a work of nonfiction, which I don't often read. But it's come very highly recommended to me by several people here at the bookshop. And ultimately, it was entertaining, it was fun. He has a very, like, glib British way of writing, and it's all about, like, how we label mental disorders, and particularly psychopathy. I'm not sure if I'm putting the emphasis on the correct syllable there. But sociopaths, psychopaths, and how it's this weird, like, stigmatized, I mean, probably rightfully so, stigmatized thing that you can't, most people in the medical, mental health profession don't believe you can ever be cured.
Right.
If you're a psychopath, that's it. Like, that basically you should be locked away from society because you can, like, pretend like you've gotten better, but you're never actually better.
Right.
And Ronson sort of, like, goes to this training seminar and, you know, starts identifying people as, like, well, that guy's got psychopathic tendencies. So, but ultimately, I don't know. I don't know if the ending was sort of, and then he stopped writing kind of a thing. Like,
okay.
And then I was done my research, so,
yeah.
Like, he doesn't really, I don't know if I wanted him to come to a conclusion or say, like, we should be doing things this way or we should change this, because it's not really his position. But it also underlines to me why I don't really read a lot of nonfiction.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, you know, it wasn't like, you know, I sometimes I will read works of history because it's like then you can end it because it's like and then the battle was over or then they signed the treaty.
Right.
But this wasn't like that. This is much of a, more of a personal journey. So it was good. So yeah, I mean it was all right.
Six, try it.
Yeah, exactly. Six out of ten. And then tonight I started a new book coming out this summer. Doesn't have a release date yet. I think it's going to be a horror. I'm only like 20 pages into it. It's called In a Dark, Dark Wood. Her name is Ruth something. I will get it at the break.
Good old Ruth something.
Yeah. Again, it's very British. I can't even speak to what it's about. It's a woman who's a writer who gets invited to a bachelorette party, or as they say in England, a hen do. That's how it's referred to. It's a hen do. From someone she went to college with.
Okay.
So there's some history about this woman's hen do that she's not sure she wants to go to. And that's as far as I've gotten.
Okay.
So, like we talked about last week, adaptations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we got all through, I mean, we didn't get all through movies because...
We hit every single one.
As was mentioned on Facebook, one of the listeners, Sean, which is spelled S-H-A-U-N.
Incorrect.
Because apparently, no, that's correct. Apparently his parents decided to spell it that way.
Sorry,
Sean. Hi, Sean. He pointed out that we didn't mention The Hunger Games, which he thinks was a really good movie, but not a great adaptation from the text, which I agree with.
Yeah, I think last week we did touch on sort of these films that are being made now that are adapted from books that are made to serve the fandom.
Right.
And that's sort of how I felt about The Hunger Games. I'm not a Hunger Games fan, although if I'm a fan of either version, it's definitely the films and not the books. I can't stand Katniss, but that's a topic for another day, I suppose. But I think it was a film that was made to please the fandom, and they included only things that would please the fandom, and sort of made this film that just catered to everything that people liked about the books instead of really worrying about adapting a story to a film. And so in my head, we touched on it last week because we talked about films like that.
Right, but we didn't specifically name The Hunger Games, the other thing that Sean pointed out was, I mentioned going to see Jurassic Park with my dad at the Plymouth Meeting Mall. And I may have said something like when there used to be a theater there. Sean pointed out that there is still a movie theater there, although, again, technically correct I was, because the mall used to have the movie theater. This is going to be so boring for anyone that doesn't even know what mall we're talking about. The theater at the mall used to be connected to the mall, and there were like these cavernous 500-seat amphitheaters, and there were only two screens, and the one there is like a 12-screen Regal now. So, Sean, you were right, but also this Sean was right. So we'll call it a draw.
Fair enough.
A couple of weeks ago, Showtime kicked off the second half of the first season of Outlander, which doesn't mean that, like, that numerical system. It's kind of like trying to number episodes of Cracking the Spine. Like,
Well, there's a lot of shows that do this now where they, break up their seasons.
Right.
Which is confusing, and I think makes the seasons feel longer, although it's kind of reassuring to sort of always have a television show
Enough, yeah, so you're not waiting a whole year.
You're not waiting a whole year. Walking Dead does that, they break their seasons up, but it makes it, to me as a viewer, I think it makes it disjointed. It's like, what season did that happen? I don't even know.
But then, then this coming Sunday, or depending on if you're listening, it'll be last Sunday, Game of Thrones is season 5. Yeah, right? Is going to kick off on HBO, which the world is excited for. So we're going to talk television today. We did movies last week, and we tabled television for tonight. So tonight it is, right after this little break. We'll be right back.
Check us out on the web and all various forms of social media. You can check us out on Twitter at Cracking Spine, Facebook.com/Cracking the Spine Show. Rate us on iTunes or Android. And if you have questions, comments, hate mail, send it to our way at crackingthespineshow@gmail.com. Well, Welcome back to Cracking the Spine. I'm still Zane.
I'm still Sean. Bum 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 bum. That's how we get around not having the rights to licensed music.
You're lucky we didn't meow it.
I think I'm covered for that. So yeah, I just real quick, laundry, housekeeping kind of stuff. Ruth Ware, W-A-R-E, Ruth Ware is the author of the book I'm reading, In a Dark, Dark Wood. So I got that for you guys. So you can
rest easy,
Ruth Ware. I did not overlook you. So now that we've showed off our musical chops, let's get into it.
To talking about television.
So I want to lead off with a question this week because you had the good lead off question last week.
Okay.
And my question to you is, do you think that there is a difference in what makes a good television show from a book and what makes a good film from a book?
That's a good question. I think in television adaptations, I think you have more room. We were talking last week about films that try to get like the minutiae of the book down, very detailed, faithful adaptations that don't stray, and how sometimes in a film that can be a failing. It can mean that they spend too much time on that and there's not enough room for good plot development or character development. And I think in film, we talked last week about serving sort of like that higher purpose of the intention of the book, the feel of
getting
the
theme as opposed to the action.
And I think in a television series, you have the opportunity to do both because you have more time to explore both minutiae and plot devices and character development and things like that. So I actually think has to be much more labor intensive in a way to adapt.
To do the television show,
series.
Yeah.
But I think it's possibly more forgiving. And you also have the luxury of, being able to air episodes and getting feedback.
Right.
And then being able to sort of tailor it. So again, not easier by any means.
No, in fact, I think that's a really good point that you make about that the television, adaptation, that the script writers and actors have harder time doing television than film, because I think in 2015, I think audiences expect more quality programming in television than they do in movies.
We are spoiled rotten now with good television.
Exactly, right? I mean, we have so many, we have a dearth of channels. We have, internet service, Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and, the countless cable channels, and they're all providing, if you just look at the Emmy nominations or the Golden Globes for television, pretty much everything that's getting nominated and winning is not a network show. Right. It's your cable stuff. Yeah. I mean,
Well, it makes it difficult, I think. Like, it's, I noticed it a lot. It was, very apparent to me when True Detective was on, which I don't... Did you watch True
Detective? No, I did not, but I've had a lot of people tell me that I would enjoy it.
It was it's such good television, and we would watch... we'd sit down and we'd watch True Detective, and then you go back and you try to watch something on, NBC, and it's like, this is not good. Like, now I know what good television is, and all these years I've been watching, reruns of Friends and thinking that this was the pinnacle of good TV.
Or if you try to watch an episode of any sitcom that has a laugh
any
track.
Any sitcom with a laugh track,
and it's like you want to just throw your TV out the window.
Yeah, it's, so we're spoiled now. And I think that's a good thing. I love that there's good quality in television, and now we have the ability to see that and have access to it. But
so in terms of being able to go bigger and have more characters and more nuance, we're probably going to go to this one a lot because it's the show of the day.
Absolutely.
It's the Game of Thrones.
Yep.
So, when they announced that the Game of Thrones was going to be made into a television show, that's when I started reading them.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel pretty confident saying that season one of the show stays very true to the first book. I mean, there's obviously, you can't get everything.
Right.
But, in terms of, who lives, who dies, mm-hmm. where everybody goes, where everybody ends up at the end, very true to what George R.R. Martin wrote. I also think they've had to make some choices in the intervening seasons that have changed the text. I've also read Martin say about this season, there will be characters that are killed on the show that aren't killed in the books. There will be storylines that will go further than what you've read in the books. I don't know, as a reader, as a, you know, I'm a book person first and a television show watcher second, certainly in terms of the context of this podcast. I don't know if I'm okay with that. I don't know if I'm okay with figuring out, with finding out the end of the world of Westeros before I've read it.
Yeah, and I can see people's frustration with that. I know people are very divided about this. People, you get like book readers in Game of Thrones, and you get show watchers. And there's definitely overlap, but you basically fall into one of two camps with very few gray areas.
Yeah, there's not a lot of overlap.
Yeah, and as far as I can tell, the book readers are not very forgiving when it comes to the adaptation. And I think I have sort of an unpopular opinion in that I think that the TV show is much better than the books.
Ooh.
Which I know is very, very controversial, but I personally feel that these are fabulous stories. They are absolutely amazing stories, amazing characters. This is an incredible world that he has created. But as a writer, he is maybe not that great.
Ooh, all right.
I think that they are poorly written. They are fabulous stories that are poorly written. I find the books very difficult to read. They are not engrossing. It is very hard to keep. They're not exactly page turners. It's like, wow, oh my God, because it's very dry. And in that way, like, some of the most interesting stuff possible is happening on the page, but it's like, do I have to, like, it's very hard to get through. And, I'm not a big fan of books that do that to me, that are like, you know, you must suffer to read this story, especially when it comes to a fictional story like this. So I think what I like about the TV show is that it takes, and credit where credit is due. A lot of times when I say this, people are like, no, they're great books. And they are. It's a great story. They're great characters. It's an incredible world that he's created. But I think he, as a writer, is maybe not so great at getting that across. And the TV show gives us a chance to view these stories told by someone else.
I also think, though, that there's a little bit, I mean, just sticking up for the readers, not so much sticking up for the writer, because I kind of hear what you're saying. Like, it's, he gets bogged down in the lineages and in the, you know, in all of the, like, you know, when you read the first book, it was four houses, and then it turned into, like, eight. It's like this Hydra thing. There's so many different houses and banners and whatever. But, I you know, in defense of the book readers versus the television watchers, I think there's a little bit of this sense of, like, betrayal by Martin and the writers of the show, because, like, the example I'll go to is, okay, so in season one, and I'm going to do a lot of spoilers on the show, like very specific things that happen, so
blanket spoiler.
If you haven't watched it, like, go watch it and then come back and listen. So in season one, why can't I think of his name? He gets beheaded. Ned Stark. Ned Stark gets beheaded, right? And everybody around America, all around America, is like, oh my God, Ned Stark's dead. How could he kill Ned Stark? And everybody who had read the books, everybody, like, we all sat back on our hands and went, just wait. Because we knew the Red Wedding was coming.
Right.
We knew that, like, you know, how can he do this? How can he allow that character to die? And you're going, like, if you've read the books, you go, all right, just wait. Yeah. And, like, we could have been jerks and been like, you know what? He's going to die. He's going to get killed at his own wedding, and they're going to kill his mother. And, like, he's going to violate the rules of hospitality and, like, you know, curse his house forever. Oh, by the way, Joffrey's going to get killed at his wedding, too, by Sansa.
Right.
But, like, we didn't. And now that Martin has decided that he's going to spoil the ending of the books for the television audience, I think the readers go, wait a minute. Did we been, like, not me, but, like, a lot of people have been reading these books since they were first written.
But I think, I think you're drawing a kind of a weird distinction between, like, that theoretically, that spoiler, like, for someone who had only ever watched the show, that information that Ned gets beheaded is out there in the world. And I had never read the books, so I had no prior knowledge of that. And it was sort of, it ended up being my choice to watch it on the TV show instead of reading it in the book. But that exists out there. So it's sort of weird to say then that, like, a faithful book reader now,
well, he doesn't have the choice. The choice has been taken away as to whether or not he's going to
get learned. I don't think that's true. He doesn't have to sit down and watch the show, is my point.
Okay.
So that's like, I mean, I get it. I get what you're saying, and it absolutely holds true. And I understand this sort of feeling of betrayal by faithful readers that, you know, they're this medium through which that they really like getting the story books. George R. R. Martin was like, well, let the, you know, let the showrunners handle that and they can tell this story for me first.
Yeah.
Like, he's sort of handing over these plot points, and I understand the frustration and the betrayal, and I think it's completely legitimate. But to say that, like, you know, no one's forcing you to sit down and watch it. I mean,
I know what you mean. Popular opinion might
you know, bring out spoilers. I mean, this is like when we found out, you know, that Dumbledore died and stuff.
Wait, what?
There were Turks who were like,
Dumbledore's in Game of Thrones?
Dumbledore's in Game of Thrones, and he gets beheaded.
Oh, man. Thanks a lot, Jean-Luc Picard. All right, so let's move on from Game of Thrones for a little bit, because we've already spent, you know, enough time, and I'm sure we'll come back to it anyway. Yeah. Because there are other television shows that have worked or not.
Absolutely.
And I, you know, let's go back to someone we talked about a lot last week, in Stephen King.
Yes.
A very prolific writer, and a writer that a lot of people like to adapt, because his stuff is successful or not.
And there's just a lot of it.
So, you know, I came up with a couple of examples of really good adaptations. The Stand miniseries, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. I think, you know, was very true to the book, very faithful. It's a little bit dated if you try to go back and watch it now.
Yeah.
Because it's that thing of, it was a network show with commercials, you know, over, I think it was 3 or 4 nights. So it feels like, you know.
A lot of those miniseries, they're kind of weird to go back
There's like
and
a
watch.
Hokey factor to them. The same with It.
I was just going to say, It is definitely an example of that, which I think, I mean, I'm glad that they tried to adapt It the way that they did, because how else are you supposed to tackle that giant, dense book? Other than a miniseries. And even so, they still had to simplify and cut things out.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, it captures so much of the book so well. Like, Tim Curry as Pennywise, the clown, is still, I mean, you can still see the pictures or hear someone say they all float, you know what I mean? And you're instantly taken back to that horror factor. And the very end matches the very end of the book, you know, in so much as they go into the sewers and they find this giant eternal spider.
Yeah.
Right? But when you read that in the book, when you read the text on a page about that, it's terrifying.
Yes.
When you see it, I remember distinctly, like, what, that's what it was? Yeah. It was just a spider?
And I think they sort of suffered from the fact that this was, it was a network adaptation. Like, at the time, you know, had an HBO come in and said, well, you know, we don't have ratings and we'll adapt this how it needs to be adapted, it would be different. And I think that's part of why it sort of seems dated is, like, you know, it had to be suitable for all ages.
And the other thing that happens is it was pre-CGI. Yes. I mean, the effects of the time was...
Which sometimes helps things like that.
Well, it depends on how it's done. You know what I mean? Like, if you do it right, if you're actually doing, you know, building sets and building, you know, getting Stan Winston to build you puppets, it works. But
then
if it's like
the thing,
corny green screen, yeah, exactly. But some other ones that stuck out. Actually, one I think that is interesting is it's actually been done twice. And it's not something that we talk a whole lot about in terms of adaptation, and it's a nonfiction adaptation. It's Cosmos.
Yeah.
Carl Sagan's, you know, incredible.
Absolutely.
The program that was originally on in the 70s, you know, with him in his turtlenecks and his, you know, his very deliberate speech cadence. Mm-hmm. And, but then, you know, and then rebooted by, of all people, Seth MacFarlane.
I know.
It's like, let's see, I did Family Guy, I've hosted the Oscars, let me do the most important scientific program of our time.
It humanizes him.
It kind of does.
It does, actually.
Because, you know, he's
using his powers for good and not for evil. Except so that he's,
it's almost like, it'd be like Lex Luthor opening a children's burn ward. It's like, you've built that mountain of money and clout doing fart jokes in 7 different shows. Basically the same fart joke.
I joked and said it humanizes him, but it does, because it gives you a little bit of insight. I mean, this is, if you, which I only like sort of have ever watched stuff like Family Guy, but you know, it's clear that he's a big fan of like fantasy and science fiction and stuff like that. And I think his love of science and like stuff like Carl Sagan and Cosmos and everything, it all stems from the same place.
I mean, just to go off on a little bit of a tangent, and we'll get back to Cosmos, it's just the idea that, like, you know, he's a very smart man. It's very clearly, it's very clear in watching his stuff that he's a very intelligent guy, and he gets humor, he gets comedy. But, like, I would draw the parallel to Matt and Trey of South Park, because Matt and Trey are both also intelligent, have a great sense of humor, and do basically a fart show cartoon, but South Park is a million times smarter than the Family Guy or the Cleveland Show or the Alien Dad Show, whatever it's called.
But once again, it needs to be said that South Park is on Comedy Central.
Right.
And Family Guy is on Fox,
which is sort of a network.
Which makes a difference. I mean, Fox is pretty lenient as networks go, but...
Fair enough.
You know, they might not give him the same kind of free reign that Matt and Trey have been given. And I think it's a different scope of talent, what we're talking about.
Definitely.
But...
And interestingly, part of the deal with Seth remaking Cosmos with Neil deGrasse Tyson and Sagan's Widow... was he basically said to Fox, I want free reign on this. I want you guys to let me do the show the way it needs to be done.
Right.
And Fox went, you know what? I mean, you've made us a lot of money. You continue to make us a lot of money. Sure, go ahead, do it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if have you watched the new updated Cosmos with Neil deGrasse?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
It's mind-blowing stuff. I mean, every episode you go, oh my God.
Yeah. Well, and just to make that kind of knowledge interesting and accessible on television is just, it's an awesome accomplishment. That this is even a thing that people are interested in, and that it would be something that a television network would be saying, like, you should definitely be interested in this.
Like, and you could see, like...
Watch this. It's
like
cool.
Like a fifth grade class watching it, and then, you know, the kids going, I should read that book.
Yeah.
Because I think that if you assigned a fifth grade class to read Carl Sagan's Cosmos, you don't have any engagement there. So it's interesting the way, you know, it sort of goes circular. Like, you know, when Cosmos was first written, everybody read it. And then watch the show. And then Seth MacFarlane went, we need to do this again. Yeah. People are watching it. And then they go back to read the book.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just something that stuck out. And the other one that was mentioned to me by a coworker here at the shop, her name's Pamela, which I've only ever watched a little bit of in terms of adaptation, is Roots. And, you know, Roots for a long time was like the miniseries.
Yes, absolutely. And it was a very successful miniseries.
Yeah.
Now I'm not as well versed in, you know, the roots
of
Roots. I don't feel like I can talk about it with authority, but
it's
extremely successful,
right?
And, you know, it's widely considered to be one of the best.
And then you have the ones that didn't work,
which there are many.
So there's, I mean, let's go back to Stephen King for a second, because Under the Dome, which was not the Simpsons movie. It's a totally different thing. But it's the same idea. It's that a little town gets trapped underneath an invisible dome.
I brought this up to my husband earlier, and he was like, what's that about? And I was like, you know, that Simpsons movie? And he was like, oh, yeah.
But I read Under the Dome when my first child was born. I was reading it in the hospital, like, while my wife was taking naps. Because, you know, when else are you going to read Stephen King? And it is a really long book, believe it or not, from Stephen King. It's probably about 1,200 pages. And the first two-thirds of it are really good.
Yeah.
And then there's the last third of it, which is abysmal. I mean, like, drives the story off a cliff abysmal.
Right.
And from what I gathered from people who have watched it, because I decided when it came on, I was like, is it a made-for-TV movie? No, it's a miniseries. It's not even a miniseries. It's like it's kind of like Game of Thrones or Outlander. Like, it comes back in seasons. And it's like, eh.
Yeah.
And what I've heard from people is like, eh, no, it's so bogged down in the minutiae and the characters, and it's like, you know, you either have to get them out from under the dome or kill everyone.
Right.
You know, so, and the other one that sticks out in my head, and, you know, maybe people will throw me under the bus for this, is Sex in the City.
Yeah.
Which was based off Candace Bushnell's novel,
mm-hmm.
Which obviously I'm not the audience for, but I mean, you know,
I don't know.
Speaking of,
it seems pretty relevant to your interests.
Yeah, I've often thought to myself, $400 shoes, maybe after
you
I have sex with that hot
you
guy.
You're a young single woman living in New York City.
I am. All of those things are accurate descriptions of me. But you know, it's just, I don't know. It seemed, I've watched a few episodes of it. I don't know how well or not it adapts the source material.
I've never read any of the source material for that show. I have watched more of it. I'd had a roommate my freshman year.
Oh, yeah, a roommate.
Who watched it endlessly. So I can say I've seen more of it than I cared to. Because I'm also not the audience for that. And I like soapy bad television, too. But I will say, I've heard that the books are not great.
Okay.
And not anything like the show. The show took like this little kernel of just this little tiny piece of like, oh, it was a woman who writes a sex column. And that was sort of like the end of it. And I mean, I'm probably getting this completely wrong, but I've heard that the book is basically just like excerpts of the sex column.
Okay.
And so I think in terms of adaptations, you know, maybe it's not a super faithful adaptation, but it's certainly successful in that they took what was a pretty small piece of source material and turned it into something that was very successful and something much bigger than, you know, the sum of its parts.
Well, that's interesting because that's a different thing, I think, a totally different kind of animal than what goes on with film, like success versus good.
Yes.
And I think that with television, you know, it's much more important, at least for the people making the show, that it be successful than it be good.
Yeah.
You know, they're not so worried about critical feedback as long as the ratings are good, which I think is exactly what happened with Sex and the City. You know, it probably wasn't. I don't even remember very well if it was really well received by critics, but audiences loved it.
Audiences loved it, and I think I can't speak with a ton of authority about Sex and the City. Although, and now you put me in a weird position where I kind of have to be the one to defend.
2 weeks in a row, weird position. Last week it was me. This week it's you.
I think it was that show was unprecedented. What it did and the topics that it dealt with. There were not a lot of shows on television where women talked frankly about their sex lives.
Right.
And just about being women and what it was like to be, you know, in your 30s and single. And so I think the show was sort of groundbreaking, and I'm making air quotes here.
No, but I know what you mean.
In that respect. And I think if it held any critical acclaim, it was coming from that place.
Right.
And this is even a show, I think if you go back and you watch it, it is very dated. Because we sort of move past this, that like one particular sect of, like women's rights where women like needed to talk, I have sex all the time. And it was an empowering thing.
Lena Dunham has girls.
Yes. But, it was sort of like, it's very dated to me when I go back and watch it.
Okay.
It was that 90s, like, women were taking sex back.
Well, it was such a brash, loud show.
Yeah, and I think it was a necessary step to take, but we've sort of now moved past it.
Right.
So again, I mean,
okay.
Then
let's move on from your favorite show.
I actually did another. Of course, now I'm the one talking about all these horrible soapy shows, but another example of a kind of a crappy book or book series that was turned into what I think is a pretty successful TV adaptation is The Vampire Diaries.
Okay.
Which is, now I love...
You love vampire stories.
I love crappy teen stories.
Okay,
all
right.
Which right now are all vampires.
Okay.
But I love reading young adult fiction, and I love watching crappy teen TV. I
own that, girl.
I've seen every episode of Degrassi.
Okay.
So that's just who I am. I'm cooler than that, I swear. But The Vampire Diaries is like... It's a terrible book. It's really not good. It's not fully formed. The characters, it's just everything happens very suddenly and just because, like, they should. There's one point in the book where the two main characters tell each other that they love each other. It's like 30 pages into the book. It's like, you what? Because, like, you know that it's going to happen, but
right.
It's like, why? Why do you love each other already?
Well, because they had to.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think the show is just it's a crappy CW teen show. But I think in terms of adaptations, it's very successful. And it took kind of crappy source material and turned it into a good soapy teen drama.
All right. Well, there's a bunch of those. I mean, there's a bunch of those. I mean,
Gossip Girl's
the
same thing. Which again, Gossip Girl, not great source material, but a pretty good adaptation.
Okay.
True Blood, I think, was another one. I have read some of the True Blood books, and they're sort of fine.
Okay.
They're kind of not as interesting as the TV show, which was.
That's what I've heard from a bunch of people. Is that like the show is so much better?
Yeah, which is like not saying much.
Okay. All right.
The show's not good television. The first season was really interesting to watch, but again, it's sort of like bland source material, which is a weird thing to say about a vampire book. But it's sort of bland source material that was turned into a really interesting, or at least fun to watch, entertaining show.
Right.
So in terms of successful adaptations, I guess that works. Okay. I mean, it's sort of subjective what successful means.
Well, again, it's, you know, does television, do audiences, every audience member defines success on their own, but right. Television has its own metrics for what is successful. I mean, successful is you get another season.
Yeah.
You know, successful is they take Under the Dome and they keep making it.
Right.
Successful is you take Game of Thrones and you give the ending away before I've had a chance to read it. Finish the books, George! All right, I've covered all my bases. Do you have anything that you want to hit before we move along?
No, I think that covered.
So we've exhausted television, and I'm
finally
I'm ready for a break. So let's go ahead and take one, and we'll be back in just a minute with more Cracking the Spine. Welcome back to Cracking the Spine. I'm Sean.
And I'm Zane.
And we're done. We've
we're done.
We finished talking about adaptations. We did movies, we did television. Those are the only medium you can turn books into. I guess we could do video games next week, but we're not going to.
Is that a thing?
Well, there's an Ender's Game game, I think.
Do they turn books into video games?
I think if you turn a book into a movie, then it can get turned into a video game.
Telltale's been doing those, like, Walking Dead episodes.
Oh, man, we need to talk. We missed The Walking Dead. The audience is going to let us know about that.
That's fine. We can talk about it next week. You don't watch that, do you?
I don't watch that. No. I've had it with zombies.
Yeah, I feel that.
I'm a little zombied out. Yeah. So anyway, as always, guys, you know, let us know what we missed, because I'm sure we missed stuff.
Lots of stuff.
And, you know, how do you feel about, what's your take on the Game of Thrones? I mean, you know, are the readers right, or are the television show watchers right? What comes down to, once again, is Sean right or is Zane right?
me.
No, you get to be
it's
right.
Me.
No, not always. It doesn't always have to be you. Sometimes it has to be me. Okay, so, yeah, that'll wrap it up for this week. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about next week. We've got a week to decide.
Who knows?
So if you guys have a show idea.
Yeah, any show suggestions would be great. That you want us to talk about.
Definitely awesome. So that's going to wrap it up from Doylestown for this week. For episode 11 of Cracking the Spine, I remain Sean.
And I'm still Zane.
And we will talk more next week. Thanks for listening. The views and opinions expressed on Cracking the Spine are solely those of the hosts and the guests, and are not necessarily reflective of the Doylestown Bookshop, its owners, nor management. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll talk more next week.